protéger la propriété intellectuelle de nos industriels.
Le droit d'auteur.
Technology Intellectual Property.
R2PI. R2PI, le podcast de la propriété intellectuelle.
Chers auditeurs, chères auditrices, bienvenue sur R2PI, votre podcast de propriété intellectuelle. Ici, on parle de pays, on en parle entre amis, mais surtout, on vous en parle. Bonne écoute!
Dear listeners, welcome to this special AIPPI Congress episode. I'm Chloe, I'm delighted to welcome Christopher Cavani for this episode focusing on the future conclusion and adoption of the Design Law Treaty, which is due to take place at the Diplomatic Conference in 2024. Hi, Christopher.
Hello, good afternoon.
Could you introduce yourself and tell us about your role within AIPPI?
Yes, so my name is Chris Cavani, and I am an American attorney, actually a lawyer to be clear with the different terms that are used, but with a background in engineering. The focus of my practice is regards intellectual property, but I've always had a keen interest in the area of design law. I'm currently the chair of the AIPPI Standing Committee on Designs, and I've been in that position since 2016. And also, with respect to the U.S. group, I'm the immediate past president of AIPPI U.S.
Very nice to see you.
Very nice to meet you.
Let's get right to the heart of the matter. Can you give us a quick overview of this new treaty?
Yes. So we're talking about the DLT, which stands for the Design Law Treaty, which is something that is administered by WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Office. And the key aspect to the treaty is something that has been similar in areas of patent law. You might be familiar with the PLT or with respect to the TLT for the Trademark Law Treaty. But this is the Design Law Treaty, and its purpose is a formalities treaty used to make obtaining design rights throughout the world easier, faster, cheaper, and making the process less complex and more predictable.
Thank you for this precision. Who was behind this initiative? The member states themselves or professional associations such as AIPPI?
Well, as far as its origins, there is a long path that gets us to this point. Of course, in these other branches of IP law, we've had success in developing treaties in patent law and in trademark law. It really took root in 2006 out of the Standing Committee on Trademarks, Geographical Indicators, and Industrial Designs, which is a standing committee within WIPO. And that was initially brought up in 2006, which historically you're looking at right off the heels of the 2006 Singapore Treaty, which is related to the TLT. So mm-hmm. there was a lot of momentum in regard to trademarks, and that was the early initiative in order to say, I think we need something like this for designs.
Mm. In your opinion, why did it take so long for a draft treaty on design to be initiated when there has already been one on trademarks since 1994, on patents since 1970, and on copyright since 1996?
Yes, well, international diplomacy sometimes can be a frustrating exercise. Sitting in that room in Geneva, Switzerland for many years for these sessions, one of the fellow delegates of the NGO one time compared it to watching paint dry.
Uh-huh.
So it could be a very slow process and frustrating. It had moved in what we'd say fits and starts. There was a lot of significant progress that was made from the outset in 2006 up until 2000, I would say until 2013, with an average of a few meetings a year with a lot of negotiations in between, that it had progressed to pretty far along with some draft articles and draft rules. But there was then, because this you're trying to get consensus out of that forum, you're talking about almost 190 mm-hmm. countries that are involved. So there's a lot of different levels of development,
mm-hmm.
And including these countries are LDCs, least developed nations, and countries that don't really have a firm rooting in design rights. So there was an importance here to make sure if this was going to be a success that we could bring everybody
mm-hmm.
along. So there was an effort to try to have some provisions that were providing for technical assistance in how to implement the treaty, which in fairness, I think was a really good idea. That slowed things down because there needed to be some economic studies that needed to be done in connection with that. So that was right around 2014. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be some good momentum around that particular provision. And then once that was adopted, you also have to understand that there's always other things going on in the world of international diplomacy, which could infect your particular treaty. And in this situation, it dealt with the very hot topic of traditional knowledge, traditional cultural expression, and biological and genetic resources. There was in the ICG, the Intergovernmental Committee, there was efforts to have a negotiation regarding those concepts. Sometimes you'll hear them called TK, traditional knowledge, TCE, traditional cultural expression, and biological and genetic resources. And there was then, perhaps out of frustration that they weren't getting as much traction as they wanted in that other forum, there was an effort to try to introduce those concepts at the 11th hour into the design treaty. It was frustrating because I think most who operate in this sphere realize that things regarding biological and genetic resources really doesn't have a lot of connection to design rights. But nonetheless, there was a really strong effort to try to insert that into that agreement. Ultimately, it broke down. It was a very late session in Geneva. Typically, they ended about 5 or 6 p.m. This went far into almost midnight when we had a session. We thought we had some, there was some attempts by the chair to try to reach agreement, and ultimately it failed. So that we were at a standstill from 2015 all the way until 2022.
Okay.
Almost 7 years. Gap of nothing happening. So a long time, but there was a period of time where nothing was happening.
Very interesting. Thank you. You mentioned the process. Could you tell us a little about the treaty adoption process?
Yes. So the treaty itself is broken out into a set of articles, which are sort of the broader concepts of what the treaty is trying to cover. And then it is, has a secondary set of rules, which adds some more specifics to each one of those. The treaty itself, I would say the main thrust of the agreement is to try to streamline the process. And one of that is to what is the maximum amount of requirements that an applicant, that a national office can provide to an applicant to get a design right. Right now, the system is incredibly complex. If you're an SME, a small, medium enterprise in a jurisdiction, and you want to apply for protection outside of your jurisdiction, it's a maze. It's very difficult. And you might, if you were to collect all those, you might have 30 different requirements across all these jurisdictions. So right now there's an effort, and it's really nice to see the national groups exercising restraint, because it's a pretty tight list right now, down to about 6 or 7 key elements. The name, the designation of the product, the design itself, who's your representative. So that's the gist of it, is trying to get a closed list is the maximum amount of requirements.
Okay, it seems effectively a little complex. As regards the treaty itself, what is its scope and what is excluded from this treaty?
This is a very important question, because as we're going through the process, there's always a knee-jerk reaction to concerns regarding your own substantive law, your country's substantive law. So, and there's a very a bright line in the agreement that this is dealing with procedural issues and dealing with issues of formalities and not delving into your traditional substantive legal issues. For instance, what is required for infringement, or what does it require for validity? Those issues. Those are separate and are not part of this agreement. Nor is the agreement actually provide you a path to getting protection. Those types of agreements, if we talk about filing treaties, patents, the PCT, trademarks, yes. Madrid, designs, the Hague Agreement, those are separate. This is really just trying to set forth and harmonize, streamline the process for filing requirements.
AIPPI has issued several resolutions on design, including one in 2006 following the London Congress on the definition and condition of protection to design. Why, in your opinion, are these subjects excluded from the scope of the treaty and left to the sovereignty of the states?
It's an interesting question. I wish that they would delve more into that topic as to what is design. I think it's for the aforementioned reason that this really is talking about formalities, and defining design, at least in some eyes, gets you into substantive law. But I will point out one aspect that is key is having the design, the title of it, is that from the Paris Convention, there are the phrases that are governing patents and trademarks, and they use the phrase industrial design. Mm. This is sort of an old-fashioned term, if I can say, particularly if you're involved in the exciting world of design currently, where so much has migrated to the virtual world, things with NFTs or animations or GUIs. And I think that's one area where I'm happy they didn't call it the industrial design law treaty. Yeah, so they exercise some judgment there. But nonetheless, in some of the definitional sections, they did refer to it as industrial designs. I think a lot of this is sort of the lineage going back to the Paris Convention.
But do you think this is regrettable?
I do. I think it's a missed opportunity to sort of modernize the effort. When I was at the sessions in Geneva at the preparatory conference, there were some very learned students from the ELSA program who were there, but they were new to the design world. And they were sitting in on the discussions. They were part of the NGOs in the back. And they were picking it up for the first time. And many of them asked me, they said, are we only talking about industrial designs? Because industrial designs really means how you're applying some type of aesthetic to a physical object. And that's that antiquated notion, almost coming out of the Industrial Revolution, the Industrial Age, and trying to adorn products in that regard. And I think just because it's so much more at this point. In some jurisdictions, more than half of the design rights that are issued are not for physical products, but rather in the virtual world. That's really where the forward-looking. So I have some regret there, but I still have hope out that that there's a lot of work still to be done and trying to this treaty, and perhaps somewhere in some of the background section we can show that this term industrial design is meant or has an understanding in its broadest context.
Thank you very much for this explanation. Let's focus a little more on AIPPI. What role has AIPPI played in this project?
I'd like to think a significant one. In these types of areas of, let's call it a niche type of area, where you have delegates from 190 different countries, and they may have more experience in the area of patents or perhaps trademarks, there's not many that have deep understanding in the area of design rights. It's just the nature of this area. Even if you look at a Congress like AIPPI, where there's many very informed IP professionals, it's still a subset of those who have deep understanding of the law and policy behind design. So I think AIPPI is uniquely positioned to bring that expertise to the table, but also as serving as a neutral voice in this. Yeah. And when you're at these types of discussions, I feel as if there is a lot of respect for AIPPI's position from proponents and those who are against a particular provision. So they are looking towards us for that insight and expertise.
So what were the main positions defended by AIPPI?
I think on some of these is reminding the conference and reminding the delegates of, we know that there's always politics, geopolitics behind things, but at the end of the day, this is trying to help users. This is trying to make it easier, more efficient, cheaper, faster, less complex for users, and trying to have that voice heard. Because I think it can get lost in the mix. So we have, as AIPPI, as counselors, as advocates, we have a direct link to users, to, in this case, to a lot of designers who we work with, and both for SME, for micro entities, all the way up to large multinational entities. What are designers looking for in a system? How can we make this better? So those issues, is having that voice being heard, was one key aspect of AIPPI, reminding almost at every turn, exercise restraint. Don't make this more complicated. The inclination of many is to say, well, this is in our national law. Let's add it to that maximum list. Let's add that to the maximum list. And it's just to remind them, if the more you add to that maximum list, the closer we are to the current status quo of just a list of 30 different elements. So there was that aspect, and there's certainly other specific aspects, but I think the two key provisions that we were trying to articulate during this was one regarding the resistance to require a description of a design, a verbal description of a design. There's some jurisdictions that seem to really want to get to that notion, but as we have stated in some of our past resolutions, that design is best communicated via representations, a visual. You know, if you had to explain to me what does the Mona Lisa, La Gioconda look like, and then your colleague had explained that, you're going to come to two totally different verbal descriptions. Okay, so there's no going to be better way to describe it than actually show the image itself. That's an analogy in the copyright world, but it's just the point in the visual context, nothing is going to do a better job than an image in order to depict that. Yeah, so trying to remind them, let's not force these written descriptions, because if you acquire it in one country, it hurts you in the other jurisdictions. The second issue is with respect to grace period. That is just a key. We currently, there's countries, this is the grace period. So in other words, if you have a public disclosure, some countries say, if you do, you cannot apply for a design. Other countries have a 6-month grace period. There's other countries in the world that have a 12-month grace period, for instance, like Europe. So what we were trying to advocate for was a 12-month grace period, a full 1-year grace period, akin to what we have in Europe, in the United States, in Japan, Korea, some of the countries of the ID5. But there are some outliers, and there's work to be done on that position. But those are, I would say, as far as substantively, those are the two key issues that we're trying to really advocate on.
Thank you. Were you able to pick up on previous work, on previous resolution?
Yes, we were. And one of the key ones was with respect to grace period. And it is really nice when you're at one of these congresses, the AIPPI Congress. What I think sets AIPPI apart from so many other of the user groups is that every year, going back 60, 70 years, they've always worked on these issues of substantive law to put out resolutions. And there's a lot of debate. Each of the member national groups submits, they're given a survey, they submit what their national law is, and there's discussion and debate for days on what should be the optimal type of legal position. And we have one specifically on the issue of grace period, and that there should be a grace period, and getting into why should there be a grace period, and what's the importance to users, but also to the public, because there's a balance to be stricken. And we had one directly on point with respect to grace period and supporting that position. So that was really nice that this is not a position that was just induced by the current discussion. This is something that had, the forethought on it, and we were able to bring that to the attention of the Congress.
And were your resolution, your position, your recommendation taken into account and followed during the initial negotiation of the treaty?
Yes, they ultimately did, but I will say that as an NGO, we're not allowed to proffer amendments directly to the floor. So what it requires is making interjections, hopefully speaking in a learned and persuasive manner, to get the attention of some of the national delegations such that they will go to the floor. There was a key provision here on the grace period, not just requiring the grace period to be 12 months, because there was some debate about should it be 6 months, then there was something that said 6 or 12 months, which seems like it was just going to create more confusion, but convincing them that on the term, the temporal aspect. But there was a particular substantive issue that AIPPI had picked up on, that how it was written, it says that the applicant's own disclosure during that grace period would be without prejudice to, as it was written, only novelty and originality. Novelty and originality. Now, that phraseology might cover all instances in some jurisdictions as to requirement. But AIPPI, because we have such a broader lens covering 70 countries, 110 jurisdictions, that when you have that, we were able to say, well, that's not all of the things that a grace period needs to cover, because you have novelty. Most countries have novelty for designs, but they don't want necessarily call it originality. There's other countries that require individual character, for instance, here in Europe, or you have non-obviousness in U.S., new original and non-obvious. In other countries, in Korea, where they have creativity is the requirement. So this was a drafting issue, but just a critical issue that what we were trying to communicate to the other groups. This is not just about what your law is, because you could say I comply, but it's your constituents from your country, the designers in your country, when they're trying to apply for protection abroad, they want to make sure that this grace period is not going, you know, is complete, that they're not going to be negatively affected by their own disclosures. So that particular amendment was made in the version which is now going to be voted on. So our amendment, our idea was formulated into an amendment that was submitted and is on the floor and that is going to ultimately be discussed, negotiated, and hopefully voted in when it comes to the diplomatic conference next year in Riyadh.
Yes, thank you for all this very interesting explanation. Would you like to add final words, maybe?
Yeah, I think the final thought I'd like to try to communicate is oftentimes when you have diplomatic conferences and these efforts, there hadn't been an announcement that there is going to be a diplomatic conference. At the preparatory or at the stages, there's a lot of negotiations, and they only announce a diplomatic conference once the text is sufficiently decided. In this case, I know that there was a strong desire to want to go to diplomatic conference, probably because we were talking about how long it took, and what was a bit unsatisfying was that at the preparatory conference, because they knew that there was going to be a diplomatic conference, there wasn't a lot of willingness to discuss the issues and try to work out an agreement at the text during the preparatory conference. So the net effect is much to do in Riyadh next year. So many provisions were left in provisions in brackets. So there's many issues that are still going to be decided between November 11th and November 22nd next year. I hope that after all of that negotiation, I hope there's an opportunity for AIPPI to participate and other user groups with expertise in this area, because I think that insight's going to be very much needed in that final step. It's not going to be just signing the document. There's actually going to be substantive discussions in the final chapter.
Yeah, I understand. To conclude, let's hope that the latest negotiation live up to your expectation, Christopher. Thank you for giving us your precious time during this Congress, and maybe see you soon after the treaty.
It was my distinct pleasure. Thank you very much,
and
fingers crossed.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Merci d'avoir écouté R2PI, un podcast proposé par le CEPI. Retrouvez notre actualité sur le site du podcast et sur nos comptes Twitter, Instagram et LinkedIn. Les liens sont en description de l'épisode. Vous pouvez également nous écrire par email à l'adresse r2pi.contact@gmail.com. À la semaine prochaine.